Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian, and we have our third Dealer's Choice episode today, which means I picked the book, and we have two recurring guests, Ashley Westover and Hua Chen. Ashley Westover is an actor, singer, and stage combatant from Georgia, now living in New York. They produce a TTRPG podcast, spoil their dogs, and get distracted by new crafting projects very easily. And Hua Chen is a Brooklyn-based graphic designer who creates systems out of words and seeks to be as unserious as possible as often as possible. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Our book today is Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Ashley is wearing a More Pride shirt with Jane
More
Austen.
Pride, less prejudice.
Damn.
Oh, that's great. That's actually incredible.
Yeah. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride. It's my girl.
I am so glad we picked this book. I read it in 12th grade in high school. It is one of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast because this is going to be a big moment. When I read it in high school, I hated it. And I knew I was wrong then.
I'm glad you knew you were wrong.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that very quickly.
Yeah, I knew I was wrong. We read it in 12th grade in the first semester. So English class, in my memory of it, was mostly like college apps. Like, I've been racking my brain. I cannot remember any like classwork we did around it. I just remember that all of my friends loved it. And I was like, what? This is not normal. I'm the kid who reads the books and loves English class when everyone else is really not having it. So this is a real subversion. I was like really trying to distance myself from a lot of my friends at the time because I just realized like these people are not my jam. And I also like the reason that I gave was like, well, it's just so played out. Like, I've seen it adapted so much that just like I'm tired of it, which is not a good enough reason either. But that's the story. And I knew I was wrong then. I, in college, watched Sense and Sensibility from 95 with Emma Thompson. She won an Oscar for writing it. And I watched that and I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I fully understand. And I read that book and I loved it. So I was just sort of waiting for the opportunity to come back to it and be wrong. And I posted a list of Dealer's Choice titles. And you guys both were like, please let me do this.
Just so, banging on the edges of
yes.
the wall. Just like, please, Erin.
Like, please, this book like is the linchpin of my personality.
I need it.
So I'm so excited just to talk to you guys. I mean, who you guys, whoever wants to go first can go first. But what's your story with this book? I knew Wa first, so you go.
Yeah, there you go. You have seniority here in Erin's tier.
Oops.
Let's
go. I also read it in 12th grade for AP Lit. However, I had read it first in 8th grade. It was like the book that got me, I think, more into actually reading things that weren't like Sarah Dessen like romance novels. Not to hate on that, but it did like spark more interest into like reading things that were from like different time periods or like had some sort of like critical social commentary, like that sort of thing. It was also remarkably the one thing that my mom and I have in common. That
oh
we
my
both
gosh.
Really like Pride and Prejudice. And I don't know if you knew this about me, Erin, but freshman year of high school, I watched the Keira Knightley remake of the movie for 2 weeks every single day. I watched that movie more than I have ever watched any movie except for maybe Shrek 2 in my life. And I think you were the one who suggested watching Pride and Prejudice to me.
Yeah, I was waiting for this to come up. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
we'll
that
circle
sent
back.
Me, yeah, on the tailspin of all the different adaptations. I don't know. I still like rewatch the BBC show like yearly. I remain friends with old roommates because of the BBC adaptation. Like, it really, like, when I say that it's like the linchpin of my personality, it maybe is.
Oh my gosh.
I was first introduced to Pride and Prejudice back in high school as well. I was in 11th grade, and I only know this because I distinctly remember I was introduced to it the same year that Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder won the Tony Awards. And I Googled it, and I was 2014, and I was in 11th grade then. But I actually got introduced to it first through the Keira Knightley movie. Because I went over to my, at the time, best friend, now wife's house, and her mom would always like make us like pizza and like homemade tzatziki sauce and all sorts of stuff. It was amazing. Shout out to Susan. But we were there for like a movie night, and like I got there like halfway through her and her mom watching the movie, and I was like, "What is this?" And she was like, "Ash, you've never heard of Pride and Prejudice before." And I was like, "I haven't. You know, I'm a sheltered little church mouse. I don't know anything." And so this is one of those few instances where I saw the movie before I read the book. And to this day, I stand by the fact that if I see the movie first, I'll like the movie and the book. But if I read the book first, I'll hate the movie. And this is the only evidence I have for that. But I stand by it. And so when I first read it, I was like, first of all, obsessed with Lizzie. But it was just one of those things where it was also one of the first few pieces of media that I really, really dove into that wasn't quite, "Hello, Bear." That wasn't.
I have her mesmerized with a pencil, so I'm
Good.
going as hard as I can.
And I'm mesmerized by her. One of the first pieces of like literature that wasn't like a children's book that we sort of like talked about last time, Erin, that didn't have to do with like Jesus is the main character in this novel. This is it, because I used to be only would shop at like the family Christian bookstore, but this was not from there. And I was like, this is amazing. Even though it's still like, you know, there's Christianity through all of it, which is why I think I was able to like
Love God.
scooch. They love God, and there's like a pastor in there, and it's, you know, old timey, so they can't be that hedonistic, right? But that was my introduction, and it's probably the book that I've reread the most. Probably the only book I've actually reread. I don't reread things and I don't rewatch movies, but I rewatch the Keira Knightley movie whenever I'm depressed. And so if my mom hears that I'm reading that, she calls me like, "What's up? What's going on now?" And then I'll reread the book, like usually in the summer when I'm feeling like life is great. So like two different moods for the two different mediums, but they both carried me through a lot, and I love both of them very dearly.
I love that so much. I love, Hwa, that you mentioned Pride and Prejudice, which is a Bollywood English language adaptation. Have you seen
Okay.
it, Ashley?
I have not, but it's going on my list now because I fucking love an adaptation. We're gonna be talking about Pride and Prejudice and zombies at some point, giving y'all fair fucking warning.
All good,
Oh
all
my God,
good.
absolutely.
Pride and Prejudice is, I found it in Target one day. I think my mom and I were like gearing up for a blizzard at Target, and we found Bride and Prejudice. It was the blizzard, I think, that happened in 7th grade, which is when I learned to knit and I made my first hat.
I have swine flu.
And then in 12th grade, we had this big trip to New York, which was, a bus ride, a longish bus ride, like 6 hours. And so our Mr. McKenna, our English teacher, put on Pride and Prejudice. And I think it was the copy that I brought on the tiny little bus screens, because it was because that was the crazy thing about this book, was that in 12th grade, everybody was suddenly like so excited for English class. Like, this was a book people loved in a way that like did not happen. Like, we, I think right before that we had read Othello, because in our county you had to read a Shakespeare play every year starting in like 7th grade. And the
That's one
only
to start with, damn.
I mean, it was
That's a
no,
contrast.
the first one we read in 7th grade was Comedy of Errors.
Comedy of
So,
Errors was so good,
okay.
actually.
it
Okay.
was such a bad one to start kids who don't understand like Renaissance English with, because there are
Right.
twins, there's so much
There's a lot.
confusion. But I had such a little bee in my bonnet about everyone suddenly like being excited to learn, and I felt like my position as teacher's pet was usurped. And I think the big thing for me is that in the class then, from my vague memory of it, and to this day, Jane Austen does not get the respect that she deserves as an incredible comedian. This is
Oh my God.
hilarious.
It's funnier every reread.
Every time I go through it, I'll swinging back and forth between like giggling and kicking
No.
my feet and then just being like, "Oh my God."
Half of the book is like sarcasm. Everything that is said is like so sarcastic. And I think the first read through, like when I was like 13, I was like there to read fan fiction. Like, oh my God, this is so romantic. I would love a man like Mr. Darcy as if I did not actually like Lizzie more. Like, do I want to be her or do I want her?
Oh, I have a whole thing about that.
Yep. Well, did you guys both really, I think you guys are both saying this really strong identification with Lizzie when you initially read it. Is that still true in this reading today? Or first off, was that true then?
I think, okay, so what happened was I really, really wanted to be like a really clever, like cut a man down with a glare, just sort of like very like intelligent, witty, just fucking like off the cuff kind of person. And so when I read Lizzie and she is exactly that, I was like, oh my God. I convinced myself that I was a lot like her, but then upon like more recent rereadings, I'm like, oh God, no. I'm more like Darcy because I can't talk to people in social situations. If I get overwhelmed, I don't speak, so I write my feelings out. I'm super protective of my friends and can be a little harsh to judge if we're being honest with ourselves. And so I was reading through it and I was like, I desperately wanted to be a Lizzie, but I am slowly coming around to being the worst parts of Darcy and none of the like swagger that he had or the money that he has. I don't have
Sorry, not wildly rich and not wildly rich and the master of an estate, like
just an anxious autistic bitch who just sits in the background at parties and is just like, this is fine. I'm here for my friends.
Yep.
Oh God, she's pretty. I don't know how to talk to her. Fuck. Oh, I've made an enemy of mine. She hates me now. Awesome. Great.
Right, like,
Fuck.
oh, I think she's really hot, so I'm just gonna go stand near her
Yeah,
and
I'm just
hope
gonna
that
walk
works.
up and then walk away and walk away
100%.
and then walk away. And maybe eventually she'll read my mind and realize what my feelings are instead of me ever actually have to say it. Like,
Yeah.
you dumb bitch. Like,
I was flipping through my notes just before we logged on. There's a moment in the sequences where Jane is at Netherfield and she's sick and Lizzie is visiting to tend to her. And she and Darcy are having some very intellectual tete-a-tete. And Darcy is like, well, actually, before we get deeper in, we need to define the parameters so we fully understand this. Bingley is like, you have to stop.
He's like, bro, why
Why
don't
don't you tell me how tall they are to the
Yeah,
centimeter?
exactly.
I need to know everything first, and I'm taking everything very literally, and I need to understand exactly what we're talking about because the thing is about Darcy too, he does not want to be made fun of. He tells Lizzie, he was like, everything I do is to try to prevent myself from being made fun of by other people.
That's me.
Initially, I was like, oh my God, I'm so like Lizzie. This is great. Like, and my mom's like Jane, and we're like, we like each other more than we actually do. I love my mom. As I've gotten older, I'm like, you need to accept that perhaps you're a Mary.
Oh, buddy, yeah.
Perhaps you're a Mary. Perhaps you think you're street smart. But really, like I truly believe also the people who like identify with like Lizzie Bennet and like the people who like read Harry Potter and identify with Hermione Granger are it's a circle.
It's me. Yeah.
Like it's the same people.
Yeah.
I love that Mary has the confidence to just do things, and then everyone else is like, we love you, bestie. Maybe not two songs at dinner. But I love that little nerd so much. In the movie, I liked her, not to be like the man, there's parts of the movie that I really enjoyed it, but I think the visualization, because you get to see Mary more there. You can see her reactions and everything instead of just like randomly like she's interjected or whatnot. And I think she's just so freaking sweet. Ugh.
Every time like I reread or rewatch like the part where she is like in contact with like Mr. Collins at all and I'm like he should have gone for her. I'm like
You could have the longing look as he like walks by.
they would have been so happy she would not have her little like girl cave like, facing away from the part of the house that he's in. She would have been there.
She would have been in it together. Oh gosh.
A meeting of true minds.
Exactly.
So, do you guys feel like Charlotte is not? Because obviously, Collins really describes him as and Charlotte as super well matched and paired. Do you disagree?
I think that they're like well matched in that they can work with each other in that way. You know, like his kind of proclivities fit into the fact that she's really just like practical and kind of like is just like down to hang a little.
It's a very practical match, and I think it reflects what I think it reflects like one of those matches that is more common, either like from back in the day or like from other, but like in these stories, people are always like, oh, you never marry for love, you marry for like practicality, but then they all marry for love in these stories, you know. But I think that's it sort of like sets the expectation and the bar for like what marriages normally are. Like it's a practicality thing, but I do think that Mary and Mr. Collins would have gotten along better and would have been a happier match. But I don't think that Charlotte is unhappy. I think she's like, I'm good. I've got a house. I'm not starving. This is great. Like I figured out a way to get my husband out of my hair whenever I need it to. I think that's where it lays in my head.
I think she's also like a good foil for him because he's so like, he's like, oh my fucking God. And she's like,
she's like, let's redirect.
She's like,
let's put this energy
let's reel
elsewhere.
It in. Let's reel it in. And like, if Mr. Collins and Mary had been like a match, it would have just been like two. There would be no like no checks, no balances. Like it would just be like these two insane people. Like
it might have gotten to the point where Lady Catherine de Bourgh would have just had them assassinated if she got annoyed with them enough. Like
that's like true. I think they're both like kooky enough and like have the same sort of like weird moralistic bent that like if it had been the two of them alone in a house together for an extended period of time, they would have like started a cult or something, or like gone
on
like
accident,
really
probably.
Like really like right turn.
Oh, I love that. That was something I didn't think about at all. I think like as much as I love the novel, like I do think like Jane Austen would like have been an even better like screenwriter or something. There's something so visual about her jokes. Like there's a moment again in that same sequence where Jane is at Netherfield recuperating, where Caroline Bingley says, let's take a turn about the room, which I don't think reads as well in the book, because in a couple months ago I was watching the Pride and Prejudice adaptation from the 40s with Laurence Olivier and Greer Garson. And they say that, and they just start pacing in a square around this room. And I was like, that can't
be what Jane meant.
That's not really in the book. And then I, you know, months later, I'm reading it, and I'm like, that's just wild. And I think that was the thing like that changed me so much, was in college when I watched Sense and Sensibility, and you need like an extremely talented screenwriter like Emma Thompson, who then like goes and plays the lead. There was a moment in that just changed me, where like Kate Winslet's character is like sobbing, screaming, crying, and like shuts the door to her room. They play sisters. Their mom is screaming, crying, shuts the door to her room. And Emma Thompson's character is like holding a cup of tea, trying to give it to either of them. And then she just panics and then just sits down and I think starts crying. It is so funny, like, that you get, because it, you know, it's like a manners comedy. And I think that it's just like it works so much better. And she's so funny. And I think like it's so much more than a romance, you know, and it's frustrating because it's so funny. Oh my gosh. But I don't know if it got caught on mic because I was just nodding a lot. I also I think every like girl or person socialized as a girl growing up wants to be not Barbie, we want to be Lizzie Bennet. But reading Darcio's like this, that, and the other, giving someone a very longly worded note, and then running away straight up and down. That's me.
That's an emo girl.
There was such a great line where Darcy had never been so bewitched by any woman as he was by her. He really believed that were it not for the inferiority of her connections, he should be in some danger.
I bookmarked tabs in my book. I had that
danger.
Too. When I every time I read that, I'm like, you got no idea, motherfucker.
And it's also so funny because he's like, wow, shit, she's nice.
The most like straight man thing that I think he does the entire book is during the turn around the room thing, when she's like,
you're at a most advantageous angle.
Yeah,
when you're walking.
He's like, I can look at your asses better from here.
Literally. And Miss Bingley's like, oh my God. And Lizzie's like, I have murderous feelings.
Well, in the end of that chapter as well, the very last sentence of that same chapter is, he began to feel the danger of paying Elizabeth too much attention.
And then ignores her.
Yeah.
Days. I'm like, that's so me.
I have
It's
feelings.
easier that
Let's
way.
just ignore them.
I think one of the biggest things that struck me in reading this is obviously commentary on society. And the episode that I'm editing currently is set during the American Revolution, and there's one character who really reads as like a villain, but in actuality she's just like, I only have daughters and I need to make sure that like we can all eat for the rest of our lives. And I think like the stakes are so high in this. And I feel like I know I didn't get it then. I know it wasn't taught to me in that way. You sort of see it in Sense and Sensibility because that has a similar setup. But like, we all want to rag on Mrs. Bennet and she deserves it because she sucks. But I think it was just like, there is such a degree of like, this is really serious. Like, it's not a game. It's not fun. It sucks that your mom is like, he danced with you twice last night. That has to be really good. That was something that drove me wild of like, I would do that after dates. Be like, this meant this and this meant that. To imagine your mother sitting the entire family down to rerun your date. Oh my God.
God.
Yeah, like in the way where she's like, I need to get my daughters. They can't all be unmarried. They like it's do or die. Like that, not in her personality, but in that part specifically, she is the most realistic person in everything. Because everyone else is just kind of like,
Exactly. Everyone else just hanging out. Yeah.
God, I love stupid characters. I love, and there's plenty of them in this book. But I love characters that are just so well-intentioned, but either so dumb or so like in their own head and like feelings about it that they can't see how badly they're sabotaging their own goals. I think that is hysterical. And I think that Mama Bennet really, really takes the cake for that one. 'Cause holy shit, girl. Like,
There was a moment where I just had to take a while and stop reading it because she starts railing about like, look what you're doing to me. I can't even breathe and I need to
my
sit down. And I was like,
nerves.
this is too close to home. It's simply too close to home. I cannot do it. I need to go away.
Yeah. I think mothers have been the same for as long as we can tell.
And I'm also just kind of like, damn, I want to be the person where every time I get overwhelmed, I'm like, I'm gonna go lie down for a few days. Like, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I'm overwhelmed.
I need to do that, I think. If I think if everyone just like went and laid down for a bit, I think it'd be okay.
The nice thing about being rarely employed and always being in my house is that I can get to a point where I'm like, you feel like crying. Take an edible and circle back in like 6 hours, and we'll see how things are.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Have either of y'all seen that film? Not even a movie, a film.
No, not at all.
No, not yet.
Okay. So
Preach.
when I watched it, this was years ago. I am not going to be able to remember everything. I just remember we got it from like the Red Box, you know, like when there used to be physical media. We got it from Red Box and it was like a family movie night. It was like me and my mom went and picked it out and we got it specifically so I could like make fun of how bad it was because I was like a teenager who liked criticizing things just to be a bitch. I don't know. And then we were watching it. I was sitting here like, this is actually surprisingly close to the actual like Pride and Prejudice. Like
Despite the
that literally the adaptation is very accurate from my memory. If there's egregious errors and people want to yell at me for it, I don't care. Eat my farts. But like when I was watching it, I was like, this is literally just Pride and Prejudice. And then there's some
and
zombies.
zombies.
Just like, but like the main like issue wasn't the zombies. It was still like, we need to find a husband. We need to get like Darcy needs he was like, I need to figure out how to convince a Wickham's a bitch. Like it was so good. And I love retelling stories because I like knowing how things are gonna end. That's why I will rewatch television shows a lot. I don't really watch rewatch movies or reread books, but I will rewatch the same three television shows a million times over because it's comforting to know what's gonna happen. And I think that's why I like adaptations and retelling so much because I know what's gonna happen. There's no surprise is going to come at me, but at the same time, there's something new. So like it appeases my autism and my ADHD that like wants some novelty, but also can't stand things to be different. It's like a fun little juggle. And so
Yeah.
coming across like movies like that, or like Most Ardently, which I just got, my boyfriend bought me that for Christmas this past year. I'll read it, I promise. It takes a while to get to things.
Don't worry about it.
It's so cool.
The other day, I massively rearranged my bookshelf because rearranging my bookshelf is my passion in life. It was what I was put
Yes.
here to do.
Yes.
And my boy
Yeah.
and I, of course, my boyfriend came home and I was like, "You need to see what I'm doing." And I showed it to him and he goes, "Great. So when do you read that?"
That's not the point, sir.
And I was like, "I'll get to it." And he goes, "Yeah, when will you read it?" And he just kept asking and he was laughing. It was all good.
That's wildly rude. Yeah, that's uncalled for, actually. I would have
No.
words with you, sir.
He's great. He's so clear-minded that it really cuts me to my quick sometimes.
Oh, so this shelf is just books I'm in the middle of right now.
Oh my gosh, Priory of the Orange Trees up there.
Yep, you're she is.
I've tried multiple sorting methods, but I don't have enough books, and half of these are design references.
Ooh.
So we don't have enough to do Dewey Decimal. We also don't really have enough to do alphabetical order credibly. So what I have right now is by genre, and then all the red books are turned spine in. So I am reminded to read the other books.
I
Yeah.
like
It
that
doesn't
method.
work. It doesn't
Oh.
work, to be clear. And then very
Well.
conveniently, you can't see any of my books. So I just look like I'm in a construction zone.
You just live in a cubicle. I have all my plays and acting stuff, and then I have like young adult slash fantasy things, and then I have my current reads, and then I have graphic novels, and then I have
Dragonology,
Dragonology and
sorry.
Pyranology.
My parents did not know what they were doing when they got me those because I could have been so normal.
Those
I
made
could
me
have been
gay
so...
and ADHD.
I know,
That's
I'm
why
like
I'm gay and
I
ADHD is because of the ology books.
and like my mom like got me like a fucking dinosaur book. I'm like,
You did this on purpose.
you did this, and she's like, what do you mean? You were always like this. I was like,
That's
this
my
to me.
favorite thing. This is why I love this podcast so much, is you get to learn about why you are the way you are. Like, I think I mentioned this Hua and R Grapes of Wrath episode, but I was just texting my mom about it recently. Like I was in utero when my mom was writing her PhD about secession. Like, of course, like overthrow the government. Like, that was in my juices. Of course, I
You
was
are
like this.
marinated in that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Not the brine.
Also, I have to say this because I was just thinking about it the other day. My mom got a master's in Soviet studies, and then 18 months later, the Soviet Union ended. And I think that's so funny.
God bless.
I know. She's like, let's get a PhD in it, guys. Let's go.
R.I.P.
What a queen.
My mom got hers in electrical engineering, but electricity changes every few months, and we get a new
R.I.P.
iPhone several times a year. So.
My mom was the first in her family to go to college, and she got it in broadcast communications and then was like, I'm gonna be a stay-at-home mom instead. And we were like, all right. She was like, I just did it so I could prove them that I could and that I was better.
That is huge main character energy, and I
Yeah,
love
I
it.
love her.
Do you know they pickled Lenin?
Oh yeah, except every
What?
year they replace like another body part of his with
With a pickle?
plastic.
Yeah, when Lenin died, they pickled him so that he'd always
They
be
did that
there.
with Mao too. They're
Oh
both
wow, I didn't know
little
that.
pickles. They have to like replace parts of their bodies periodically with like reconstruction. So at this point, who knows what the pickle versus plastic percentage is?
I'm imagining a man in a jar with capers and garlic cloves and dill.
Except it's like flowers and it's a glass case.
I'm going to be Googling this and going down a Wikipedia hole after this. Thank you so much, filling
Yeah,
the rest of my evening.
I don't know how easy it is to see the Lenin pickle, but from experience, it is very hard to go see the Mao pickle because everyone wants to see
When
him.
Evita died, there's so much that happened with her. Holy shit. Homegirl couldn't catch a break even in death. Like, where did she go for years? What happened there? What's up with people just disappearing corpses?
The Romanovs.
Ooh. Where is she? Where is Anastasia?
I'm glad we brought this up just because I've been thinking about it a lot. The number of times when I was small, my mom, again, like, knows a lot about the Bolsheviks. I was not allowed to see the animated film Anastasia.
She was like, that's not correct.
Exactly why. Exactly. That's why. And I still have never, both of you have your hands on your mouth. It's just like, Mom, there's a talking albino bat in it. Like, what do you, but down to the pronunciation, she's like, it's Anastasia. It's not Anastasia. But the other thing that she told me so many times is that the specific detail, when the Romanovs fled, they took all their jewels with them because they would need money out in the world. But they sewed them into the lining of their clothing so that when they were gunned down by the Bolsheviks, it took a really long time for them to die because it acted like bulletproof vests.
Specifically for the women.
Yeah.
Because it was in their corsets covering all of their main organs.
And why, Anne, I love you. Why? Go on, Ashley.
So you guys, you're at least passingly familiar with like the popular, it's not Disney, but whichever animated version.
Yeah.
Anastasia is popular. Again, the media I got was from the most buck wild places in Georgia. And the cartoon version of Anastasia that I grew up with, her family magically turned into musical instruments. I remember like she had to travel with all of these musical instruments in their cases because it was her family. So when she was trying to like convince her grandma or whoever that like, I'm the real Anastasia, they're like, her dad was like a tuba, and then they could talk to her, but no one else could hear them talk. And so like, it was just this girl who could talk to these instruments, and they were like, you're crazy. And she was like, but I'm Anastasia though. And they're like, I guess. And when her grandma was like, oh my God, it is Anastasia, then her family turned back into humans and they all got reunited happily ever after.
The synopsis that I have on Google right now is,
yes,
to order to give Vladimir's life back, the instruments reveal their true identities to her. Her father, Nicholas II of Russia, the tuba, Fyodorovna, the harp, her brother, Alexei, the accordion, and her sister, Titania, the cello.
These are also the least easy to travel with instruments, but that was one in a two-part disc, or like VHS, and the other one was Snow White. So not the Snow White y'all grew up with from Disney. I had my own special version. And there was like the poison comb and the poison glass slipper and everything first that the witch horrifyingly poisoned her with before she succumbed to the apple. It was, I don't know where that specific bit came from.
Part of me is like, let me tell you about the weird Russian fairy tale book that I had. But also like, who is the pride? Let's talk about Lydia. That girl sucks.
She sucks, and she's so tragic because she had, like, if things were different, she maybe wouldn't have sucked.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for her. And I have so many complicated feelings about Lydia.
Yeah.
Poor girl, but also, what a bitch.
Yeah. I mean, that is, she, at one point, I had to stop and, like, look at how old is everybody in this book, just to get my head around it. And she's 16, I think, maybe 15. She's 16, 15. Talking about the guys that we had crushes on in high school, we all make mistakes.
We were all pieces of shit. Like, if you see a high schooler on the street today, would you walk on the same side of the street as them?
No.
Or would you leave?
Even in summer.
I went into a bodega once because there was a group of high schoolers and they were bullying me. And I was I'm a taxpayer.
I was walking down the street with Broccoli, my 80-pound boxer hound. And fun fact about Broccoli, he's allergic to the sun. So he has prescription goggles that he wears on sunny days. And he looks very bad in them. And we were walking down the street and there were these two teens and they pointed and laughed at my boy. And Broccoli knew they were mocking him and he wanted to go back inside immediately. Anyway, teens were the worst.
Yeah. One time I was walking in college with my, at the time, boyfriend, and a tour bus pulled up beside us and they started making fun of his walk. But the bus was going so slow that it was basically keeping up pace with us.
And so you just turn around.
Exactly.
Just turn around. I think the thing that I have to keep reminding myself about Lydia is because she is so unlikable just on her own. Like Georgiana Darcy also got tricked by Wickham. Lizzie fully got wrapped up in that. And so when I think about like being 16 and having crushes on like adults, like it's not, you know, like that's what teenagers are going to have crushes on adults. It is up to the adults to not be a fucking predator. You know what I mean? And so I did find that it was good that in the book, like Wickham was thoroughly like, Jane Austen is very clear. Like he's a fucking villain. He's a fucking creep. We hate him. There's no quarter.
Yeah. Like you said, a predator. Yeah.
A lot of times people are like, oh, well, back in the day, people got married at like 14. It's fine. That was not the norm. It was very much so like, no, that's weird. If you were an adult and you were going after a child back then, it's just as weird as it is now. We just don't have CCTV cameras and like tracking people's locations.
Yeah, Jane is 22 and unmarried, and no one is saying you're so old and crusty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Charlotte is 27.
I'm 27. No prospects. My parents already apart of my parents, and I'm scared. I had my 27th birthday party was themed to Charlotte Lucas specifically. I had a cake with that quote on it. Aww. We all dressed up in Regency outfits, and we played like a Pride and Prejudice murder mystery. It was great.
Aww.
That's actually a genius theme. Here I've been listening to people make jokes about the 27 Club for several years, and I could have been making Charlotte Lucas jokes. Lydia has daddy issues.
Oh my God.
I think that's something.
Paying her a little bit of attention, and she's like, my dad's never here. I don't know any men.
Their dad, we only look favorably on him because Lizzie's his favorite and Lizzie's our favorite. You know what I mean? But like, he's actually not that great of a father figure to any of his other children. He even says like, all my other kids are dumb and silly, but Lizzie's kind of smart. So
yeah.
And as someone who also has daddy issues and was like, I need to like, make sure that I'm my father's favorite or whatever the fuck. Like it's cool to see that being written out and how, but also it didn't affect Lizzie as much. I think she was just allowed to do and be herself more without having to fight for it and be obnoxious about it. Like her father just allowed her to be like, yeah, you're Lizzie. I'm going to like, think your jokes are funny, but I'm not going to laugh at Lydia's jokes. I'm going to think you're clever, but if one of your other sisters says something, I'm going to think it's dumb. Like, you know what I mean?
And Lydia is her mother's favorite, right? I think.
Yeah. And it literally says at one point, like, Mrs. Bennet did not really like Lizzie that much.
Yeah. Lizzie is Mrs. Bennet's least favorite. And I think it's also that, like, the mom and the daughter competing for the father figure's attention or whatever.
Yeah.
But not in, like, a weird way, just in, like, an actual time spent in attention way. At the same time, it's not like her mom dislikes her in the sense that her dad genuinely dislikes the majority of his daughters.
Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, we've seen it happen, but
I've never seen the miniseries of Pride and Prejudice, but like I've seen the 2005 one a handful of times. I'm going to rewatch it like within the next week or so. But I think it's like with that, like it's Donald Sutherland who's like RIP. And but like everyone's like, that casting makes me like automatically love him, you know? And I think that was one of the really, I think it's a hard part of growing up. I think Lizzie has a little moment of it. Oh, like you have really let some people down and like you really do have some shortcomings and have caused harm to people. And that's really yucky for me to sit with.
Because you used to be this pinnacle of like wisdom and stability. But upon further inspection, it's not.
Turns out you didn't save any fucking money.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck, dude?
There was this whole discussion like a few years ago. I think it was either on Tumblr or Twitter, but it was like, you know, like which adaptation is the best, like blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about how like the BBC Colin Firth version is like very faithful to the text and what like canonically happens. But the 2005 version is more accurate to a lot of the nuance.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, and like a lot of the emotional factor that you kind of infer from understanding the relationships between like these characters. But The one thing that I do think they get wrong is that in the 2005 one, Donald Sutherland is just like sarcastic, goofy dad, right? Whereas in like the BBC one, he like clearly is, oh, I made a big mistake. I'll forget about it soon.
When I first like read the book and there was like the part where Darcy during his first proposal, he was like, all your family's whack, even your dad. I was like, what the fuck did her dad do? He's great. I put this man up on a pedestal the same way I put my own father on a pedestal. There's nothing wrong here. And then years later, I was rereading and like all the things we've said, I was like, oh no, Mr. Bennet, Darcy was right. Fuck.
In retrospect, I was like, oh, you actually like the things that you say and like think about like your wife, like it is not like there's no kind of like joking tenderness like in the Keira Knightley version. Like he's not like, you so silly, but I love you. Like he's like, oh, you guys are fucking idiots. And I'm just gonna ignore you because I'm not equipped to deal with anything, and I don't feel like I want to be equipped. So I'm gonna go to my library. See you later.
And
Like,
he genuinely does not care what happens to his daughters after he dies. I'm
yeah.
fully convinced of that. That's why their mom is like at a 10 stress level, because she knows that their dad isn't gonna do anything. And that's why, like, I think, because like you mentioned earlier, Aaron, like a lot of it feels like, oh, blah, 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 but like the stakes are very high. And Mrs. Bennet is the only one who only really seems that. And I think it's because they're getting a lot of their cues from their father as well, who just doesn't care.
Yeah,
And they're
he's
like, oh,
checked
so it'll be
out.
fine.
Right. And like when she's like freaking out about like the entailment of the estate, like to Mr. Collins, and he's like, huh, well, let's flatter ourselves that I may outlive you. And then it's like, and then what? The same thing is gonna happen, but you're going to die, and then nobody will be around to be stressed out about it, so it won't be an issue anymore.
No one will take care of your
It's
daughters.
only an
It's
issue as long as you're alive, which is just not true.
Something I had noticed that really frustrated me is that the big moment in the second or third to last chapter, when Elizabeth is like, I'm on the same page, I like you back. We don't see the actual dialogue. Like the actual moment where they're like, I like you too, is happens off screen. It's
Fade to black.
Elizabeth immediately, though not very fluently, gave him to understand that her sentiments had undergone so material a change since the period to which he alluded as to make her receive with gratitude and pleasure his present assurances. Like, are we writing a will?
They started making out.
That's what it is, makes for great fan fiction.
I was surprised at the sauciness of the flirting. Like you said earlier, when they're taking the turn around the room, he's got some lines. He's like the, well, give me your best angles, girls.
Riz William Darcy. Get it? Riz
Wizard of
William.
Oz,
The
Wizard of
Riz.
Oz.
I'm really glad that we got a Wizard of Oz reference in this episode, and it wasn't from me. So thank you.
Great job, team.
Mr. Bennet does have one of my favorite lines of the book near the end, which is, for what do we live but to make sport of our neighbors and laugh at them in our turn?
Love
He
it.
really has a bird's eye view of some things because he is up in the sky while everyone else is on the ground. It's because
Has
he
no
has
personal
himself
stakes.
at that level of remove.
He's just kicking back and watching the drama unfold with a bottle
He's
of
just a silly
popcorn.
little girl. He's just a silly little
I'm just a
girl.
little guy. I do want to talk about Bingley. My silly boy, the OG golden retriever.
Himbo,
I think he's
Although
so well played in the 2005 version. That's just
so good.
indelible in my mind of that's how he is. And the puffy hair.
Down to the distance between his eyes.
Everything is casting
Sorry
a
to that man. Sorry to that man, but it's true.
My favorite part of any version is when him and Darcy are doing their little like role play so he can practice proposing to Jane. I love how seriously Darcy takes it. He's just like, yes, and this is what she would say. No, tell me you love me. And Bingley's just like having a panic
I'm
attack the whole time.
posturing. I've
He's just like,
refused.
oh yes, this is what us dude bros do. I got you, brother. You're just like, all right. I love them so much.
I think the astonishing thing in Darcy is the I think the one of the reasons why he is, you know, one of the most like beloved romantic interests in literary canon is the lengths that he goes to for Elizabeth. are indirectly for her. You know, it's helping Lydia, it's paying off Wickham, it's doing all of these things and not ever making it known to her. Mm-hmm. Is really incredible. And I mean, you know, what's the best thing your man has ever done for you? Has he ever paid off?
If he wanted to, he would.
Like. Yeah, exactly.
But also, like, Darcy's not a very emotive person. We know that. Mm-hmm. But like, he works through his actions and he cares so deeply and will go so far for everyone he cares about. Even if that's a short list, like Bingley, his sister, and Lizzie. If you're in Darcy's like esteemed circle, he does not really like care about anything else other than making sure you're okay. Doesn't want any like acclaim for it. Doesn't need to get anything else out of it. And like, especially in like a male friendship in books and things, like you don't often see that sort of tenderness and care for men to show each other. And it's just like one of those things of like, oh, he's emotionally mature in some aspects. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, ah. Bless.
The scene in the beginning, like where he's like, right, he's so like good about like corresponding with his little sister. But one of the funniest kind of like moments that I found like in the beginning was like rereading the part where Caroline Bigley is just sitting next to him, just like,
yes,
tell her I said this. Tell your sister, yes, I said this. And I was like, I already
so
did.
Much.
That's she's like, so... wow, you're such a fast writer. He's like, I'm actually not. I'm a very slow writer. And she's like, wow, it's so important things. And he was like, it's not. Could you permit me to write a different letter about all these other compliments you want to give? Because I'm running out of room and I have other things to say.
There's a great line, I think, even in that chapter where Caroline Bingley, in today's parlance, says, Lizzie is not a girl's girl.
Coming right. From you?
The yes. Girl's girl yes. Is calling from inside the house.
Yes. Yes.
Like, Lizzie is maybe the most, like, girl's girl. Like, when mm-hmm. she doesn't know anything about Wickham, but he, like, kind of, like, ditches her for that other girl. She's like,
good for her. Yeah. Yeah. Go with God.
Yeah. I think that was something like that surprised me between the book and adaptations is I feel like, and it's been so long since I've looked at the adaptations, I felt like Wickham was a much more serious love interest and contender rather than just like, he's a guy that's like nice to flirt with at parties is right. Sort of it.
In the beginning, she's like, he's the most amiable man I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, girl, you got a big storm coming.
Also, in the 2005 version, I really genuinely for many years thought the man who played him was Orlando Bloom. Buddy. I know, but well. I am really bad at distinguishing between square-jawed men with long hair.
That's valid.
I see it. I see it.
Period/fantasy films.
I didn't know Orlando Bloom was the same guy in Pirates of the Caribbean and Lord of the Rings, despite both of those having a huge impact on my personality. Didn't realize it was the same guy.
We're
so
having
way.
Opposite problems where I think all of them are
this can't be the same person. He has different hair and he wears different clothes. Impossible. Shape changer, you changeling.
But I just found that exact line you were referencing, Qua, of poor Wickham. There is such an expression of goodness in his countenance, such an openness and gentleness in his manner. And I was like, this is a hard thing to Google, but I know that at some point in history, we had this understanding that like, if a person is pretty, they are good. If person yeah. ugly, morally bad. And I was trying to Google like, why history... pretty morally it did not help.
There was literally a Greek prostitute who was put on trial to be hanged or whatever, and she was like, guys, there's no way I could have done this tax fraud or whatever, I'm too hot. And she like flashed her titties and she's like, the gods wouldn't bestow this upon someone who was evil. And the jury was like, she makes a good point because pretty people
she
are
makes
good.
Two good points.
She makes two very good points. That was definitely a thing. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my Fun gosh, yeah.
Anecdote. But yes, Wickham looking pretty definitely was conducive to him getting away with a lot of shit.
Yes.
Because people just thought if you're pretty, you're probably a good person. I don't know.
I think something that really frustrated me is every romance novel, you have to put up impediments to them getting together. You have to have conflict for story. The biggest thing keeping them apart is how, like, not only like on an economic level of like it doesn't look good for Darcy to marry her, but in that like her family is insufferable. And we understand parts of that. Like her family is annoying to be around. But like, can't you get over that? Like I think that's a th that was a thing of like, who cares? Like, you're not marrying her. The understanding is his estate is like far enough away.
Well, also, a lot of that came from he talked Bingley out of marrying Jane with those same talking points. And I don't think he wanted to come across as a hypocrite to someone that he genuinely cared for and who
That's
would see
true.
him often.
Right. He's like, against my will.
He was like, against my better judgment. And she's like, how the fuck could I take that in any other way but an insult? Sit your ass down and get the fuck out of here. And he was just like,
And he's like,
how
no,
could
I'm
this?
telling you that it's real. It's real.
It's
It
real
was
love. And she's just like, actually, I hate you so much. And he was like, oh, okay, thank you for your time. Have a good day.
No, but that's such a good point because, like you were saying, like his and this is true for me, like genuine, well, his worst fear is being laughed at. My worst fear is being yelled at because something I've once said something along the lines of like, well, I don't want to be laughed at. And my boyfriend was like, that's your job. You are a comedian. So I've since realized like it's that I don't want to be yelled at, which is a whole nother thing. But I think that is such a like he I don't know what's frustrating about this book, I think, is that so much it feels like so much takes place off screen with Wickham, with Lydia and Wickham, with so much like coming out in letters and kind of like Darcy sort of saying, like, here's my whole thing. The letter, because those characters are so complex, and I feel like Darcy doesn't like really get enough screen time almost. But I think that moment, like you said, is so meaty because he is coming in here and being like, I am contradicting like all of the really firmly held beliefs, because I don't think Darcy holds a belief loosely. I think you're so right. I think it is more on his actions towards Bingley because of how central that relationship is to him. You're absolutely right.
Darcy, at the very, especially at the beginning of the book, he has very black and white thinking about everything. And Lizzie introduced shades of gray to his world. And I think that just sent him spiraling
It's like
because
having a panic attack.
That's
every
true.
time she's nearby, he's just like, what? I don't know. Fuck. It's
The second she's like, I'm not in love with you, he's like, I gotta go. I gotta like
He's
leave
like,
the
actually, I need
county.
to
I'm
leave.
leaving the county and I'm taking my cousin with me, despite the fact that he's having a great time.
Fitzwilliam was just
Yeah.
off on a side quest. I fucking love Fitzwilliam. He's just like Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Colonel, yeah.
Colonel Fitzwilliam. He's just like, yeah, I'm just hanging out with my rich ass cousin. He just takes me places. This is great. Oh, we're going over here now? Cool. What's up? I have some tea to dish, Lizzie. I can't wait
Yeah.
to tell you about this thing. We're like, all right.
Darcy's kind of like advice to Bingley, and then like him kind of them being like, oh, now I have to walk the walk, I guess. But like, it's also kind of like when you go on, like, Am I the Asshole on Reddit? And it's like somebody's like, my mother-in-law did this thing. And like all the comments are like, well, you shouldn't have fucking married someone if you didn't want to spend the rest of your life with their immediate family. And it's also kind of like, like when you're like on like a dating app and somebody's like, my parents are my best friend, or like some shit
That's
that's like
different.
a little bit weird, and you're like, and it's like easier to like make that sort of like judgment when you're like not in the situation yourself and you haven't like then like met somebody that you're like, oh, I actually like you more than I hate other things. See, like he's just being like Bingley's Reddit. He's like, today I fucked up by like by leaving the love of my life behind. And he's in the com and Darcy's in the comments like, dodged a bullet there, man. Like
Literally.
families like that are a big red flag. Divorce.
Toxic family, not worth it. Like,
Narcissistic parents. Oh
immediate
my God.
diagnosis upon
Yeah.
like two paragraphs of context.
Yeah.
Like, when I reread the book this last time, I read Collins's proposal and then I immediately jumped to Darcy's first proposal just to compare the two. And like, obviously, Mr. Collins is just so dumb. Again, I love dumb characters. He's just in his head being very much like, yeah, this is going to be a logical thing to do. And it doesn't matter that I'm kind of insufferable. Like, he does not have. I love all the different kinds of autistic representation in this book. Makes me very happy. And she had to point out several times, she was like, no, this is not like a thing that women do where we just say we're
Oh my
not interested.
God.
And he's like, oh, but no, the rules are like, this is what like I've read that is the case. And he very
Like
much so was
elegant.
like, elegant females will sometimes pretend that they don't. And she's like, motherfucker, I swear to God.
That's so harsh because I am in that way of like, I fucking love rules. And it is a thing of
Yes.
like,
And he's like,
what?
I'm following the rules. What do you want from me? And I'm
So
like,
why isn't
get
it
it.
working?
I know, I get it, Collins, but at the same time, you're the worst. And then Darcy on the flip side, like as soon as she was like she was tearing into him a bit, and he's like, okay, no, I get it. And she kept going, and he was like, no, okay,
Please stop.
that's fine. I'm gonna
Like,
go now.
that's enough cake. That's enough.
That's enough slices.
Oh,
He was like, all right, heard, understood, copy that. You will never see me again. Sorry.
yeah. Oh.
Like, Liz cannot get a marriage proposal without getting insulted.
There was not a single good proposal in
Yeah,
the
like,
whole book.
because when
But I
they
thought,
get together, they're really, he does it, they're just sort of like, well, we
well,
know.
he's like, just so you know, I still really like you. And like, if you're like, fine, then I just
Yeah,
he's just having a panic attack.
he does say at the end, he is like, and if you don't, I'll never bring it up ever again, so don't worry about it.
He's like, I'll basically just be dead to you. I promise, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. That is such a, yeah, I do have to like every day I go to my boyfriend and I'm like, you still like me, right? Right? Like,
It's a very Darcy thing to do.
you're still good, right? We're still cooking, right? And I'll just be like, don't worry about it. And I'm like Darcy in that I need like really clear signposts.
Yeah, I need to know the rules for social situations. And if I don't know the rules, I'm just going to be quiet and sit in the background or talk too much and then accidentally be insulting someone and just digging my hole deeper and deeper until they tell me to get the fuck out because they've denied my proposal. Like, there's no in between.
This was like the most Darcy-ish I ever got. But like, once in college, my roommate was like, "Hey, if you're going to the grocery store, can you also get me like a iced coffee, like from the place across the street?" And I like stopped and I looked at her and I was like, "Do they keep the milks behind the counter or on a separate table? Will I have to ask for them?
That's me.
Where do they put the sugar? What type of milk do you want? If they don't
And
have
also,
that,
what size?
what do
Like, is there
I?
a specific
What
roast? Like,
size?
do you want
Iced or hot?" Well,
iced or
I knew
hot?
iced or hot. I knew iced or hot. I was like, if they don't have almond milk, what else? Because that barista there is really mean about almond milk sometimes, and I haven't asked for milk since the first time I went in there. So it's like, I literally have never once wondered where they kept milk.
God, what? It must be nice to have a brain like that.
I
Oh, that.
know.
I have the beginning of that first proposal pulled up. I have the ebook with me, and he is very clearly like the great for opening line. He has like very clearly worked through this and like scripted it.
He has an amazing opening line, and then he immediately digs himself into a hole.
Yes, he in vain
In
I
the
have struggled.
vein.
It will not do. My feelings will not be repressed. You must allow me to tell you how ardently I admire and love you. Which, by the way, very nice that he starts with admire and then comes in with the love. That's very nice. But I think it really, and then of course she immediately is like, absolutely not. But it takes her a minute because she has to process it. And it reminded me, my first boyfriend, he basically said like, we need to take a break. And I was like, no. Oh. So we were like, can we like regroup in a week and like talk about it, you know? And so a week had passed. We met in my dorm room and I had like made a flow chart of all the things that I was gonna say. And so I was like, so I think we can get back together if these conditions are met. And I go, so like, get ready. I need to go through this. And he goes, I don't want to get back together. And I was like, oh, but I have 5 pages
I
written.
prepped.
Like, sorry, but that's not the choice in this choose your own adventure.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, okay. Would you consider this required reading? I made Hwa go first. So Ashley, you have to go first now.
Yes, absolutely. If you don't read Pride and Prejudice, we can't be friends. And I need more friends. So get on it, doggone it.
Seconded. Also, I would be remiss if I let this podcast end entirely without mentioning the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which
If you
great
weren't
depiction
there
of
for
Lydia.
it, yeah.
And great depiction of Lydia and what she could have been like if she had people around her who cared about her. And also, I had a teacher in high school, love the man, like still love the man. But he kept being like, I have some kind of books about like white girls complaining. And I'm like, as opposed to the other books about white guys complaining.
There it is.
Yeah.
And also,
Anyway.
Lizzie Bennet Diaries was like a very important, I think, moment in evolution of like people putting up their own content on the internet and how, like, as a big fan of like Dropout TV, that was, I think, a cornerstone in that bridge getting there.
Like multimedia, like using all of your different kind of like technological avenues to tell the story and like make it an experience. Like everybody following all of the Twitter accounts and kind of like watching the fights that were staged. Like crazy. Like love that shit. Watch the Kiss episode in class and screamed, if you recall, Aaron.
No, but
Or.
I remember especially my best friend at the time, everyone was watching it. We talked about it in school, absolutely. I definitely say it's required reading. I think it's rare that you get, I mean, Jane Austen is perhaps the best known woman writer in the English literary canon, and I think it's also very rare to find comedy in, the English literary canon. And I think if you do, it's like Oscar Wilde and people like that. And no hate to them. But this is really funny. It talks about class, gender, interpersonal relationships. Is there anything you guys would like to plug?
I am a producer for the TTRPG podcast that Aaron mentioned in my intro bio. It's called Queer PG. You can find us at Queer PG Pod, QUEERPGPOD on Insta, the artist formerly known as Twitter, Tumblr, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and all that good jazz. Check us out if you like things that are gay and people like radio drama, playing D&D and games like that.
Yeah. And I work at the same place that I did last time. But since last time, we have been able to launch one of our bigger clients, Independent Art Fair. They have an online platform at independenthq.com. That was not our choice, the URL. I am not a copywriter. But they do write things like features and art criticism. Lovely people, lovely platform. They try to hero untold voices in art history. And they have a fair that talks about marginalized narratives in 20th century art coming up in September. So if you're
Lovely.
in New York,
I would
amazing.
actually, I'm going to message you about that later.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well,
Happy Pride,
thank you.
everybody.
Thanks so much to Wa and Ashley. Our next episode is gonna be One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Chelsea Pope. You can support the podcast by going to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. You can have a membership, you can give a single dollar one time. Each episode of the podcast costs about $8 to create, so making a little indent in that is always appreciated. But what is most appreciated is just you here listening. Thank you so much. You can find me everywhere at Aaron R. Bowles. The R stands for, oh gosh, red leather, yellow leather. Oh God, that maybe is the worst one I've ever done. Okay, I'll see you next time. Oh, no. The R stands for Randall McMurphy, the protagonist of our next book. Oh my God. Yeah.